What type of schools do our children deserve? We will talk to the guy that wrote the book on that very subject. Our activist of the week says, just let me teach. Plus, we'll take a look at what is trending in education news, have our weekly moment of zen, and Matt Damon's mom will check in at some point. Let's bust some pencils.
This is Busted Pencils Radio, fully leaded education talk with Dr. Tim Slecker and Dr. Jed Hopkins. It's time to take a look at the top trending news stories in education. Number one.
I'm not in favor of privately run charter schools. If we are going to have a strong democracy and be competitive globally, we need the best educated people in the world. I believe in public education. I went to public schools my whole life, so I think rather than give tax breaks to billionaires, I think we invest in teachers and we invest in public education. I really do.
Yeah.
Jed, Bernie Sanders, Hillary Clinton, Republican.
Gotta be Bernie.
Just released today, people have been wondering what's Bernie's stance on public education. You don't get much more clear on that, particularly when it comes to charter schools. I believe in public education.
Go, Bernie.
Number two.
Conscientious objector nominated to run for president of New York City's largest teachers union. How does a conscientious objector get to run for teachers union president?
Well, a conscientious objector is someone who is consciously objecting to war, right? So what's the war?
The war is on children.
The war on children.
The war on children. In fact, according to this candidate, Gia Lee, who was nominated by the Movement of Rank and File Educators Caucuses, she has, quote, saying, I decided that I am obligated and accountable to my students, and that's why I am a conscientious objector. I will not administer tests that reduce my students to single metrics.
Well, good luck to her, and she's busting pencils.
She's busting pencils.
This is Busted Pencils Radio. Fully leaded education talk.
If you want to know what's best for our kids, what schools our kids deserve, and even what schools our kids don't deserve, he literally wrote the book on that subject. Author, education expert, and all-around good guy, Alfie Cohn. Welcome to Busted Pencils.
Thank you.
So listen, I want to start off very quickly because I pulled this out of one of your books, and it's obviously, you know, it may not be a direct quote, but the way we can understand American education, at B.F. Skinner has won, John Dewey lost. What did you mean?
First of all, I think it was Edward L. Thorndike won, was the original
okay.
quote,
okay.
but it's the same idea.
Sure.
And it didn't come from me. It came from Ellen Lagerman, who at the time was head of the Harvard School of Ed. And what I think she meant
okay.
was that 20th century education in America had continuously and decidedly cast its lot with an agenda of measuring everything in sight and focusing on behavior rather than the children who engage in the behavior. So what's taught, how it's taught, how assessment is completely confused with measurement, that is reducing things to numbers, all has been the dominant theme of American education with what we would call a Deweyan, more student-centered approach relegated to the periphery, and that was true even during Dewey's lifetime and even during periods of fitful experimentation in the 60s and 70s.
Hmm. Yeah, so I mean, there's never really been a golden age, has there?
No, that's right. But that cuts two ways, because even the people who think the golden age is when kids were completely obedient and did everything they were told and memorized all the facts on command successfully and were outstanding achievers, one and all, even those people who have that set of criteria for success are also mistaken if they believe there was a golden age, you know, back when standards were high and excellence mattered. That turned out to be, or turns out to be continuously, I think, kind of, you know, nostalgia is amnesia, as Adrian Rich put it.
Yeah.
But that's true for progressives as well, because even though there were times when Dewey's theory had significant impact in schools of education, it was never widely implemented in schools.
Yeah, I think that's probably one of the biggest ways to look at it is that the theoretical underpinnings of Dewey and the child-centeredness, you know, while they may have made a decent appearance in schools of education, actually filtering their way out and getting into K-12 classrooms has been, you know, nothing less than what hasn't happened.
Right. There's always pockets, you know. There's always oases, and that's certainly the case now. I visit amazing schools and teachers who just blow my socks off, but it's almost never the dominant theme. And of course, in the last couple of decades, it's been even harder to find in public schools with a relentless top-down test-driven pressure in the name of accountability and school reform and so on, which has really made it harder and harder to do what's best for kids.
Well, so you just pointed out that the top-down test-driven accountability measure. Aren't you excited about President Obama last week announcing that we should reduce testing to 2% of the year or something like that?
No, I'm worried that people will think this represents a significant change or concession. I mean, I guess we could look upon it as the first sign that testing has gotten so crazy and out of control that even the Great City Schools Group has said it's too much. But first of all, even that's too much. But second, the idea of high-stakes testing, where the tests that kids take determine whether they move on to fourth grade or whether they get a diploma or how much teachers are paid. All of that has been left intact, which is really where the atrocious damage is done. Moreover, if those tests matter and if they're done every blessed year, I mean, 2% allows for every year, which is absurd and almost unheard of in the rest of the world, by the way. But even that still allows preparation for testing to cannibalize most of the year, which is the case now. So the actual number of hours spent taking the test, you know, is just the tip of the iceberg.
2%. He was only talking about testing. And I'm glad you reminded everybody listening on Busted Pencils Radio, Alfie, that did not even begin to scratch the surface of test prep.
Testing. When I look at your work, Alfie, and I have to tell you, I'm really a big fan of your work. I've got all your records, you know.
Thank you so much.
I've got to wonder, you know, are you an optimist? I mean, it's really gotten out of hand, hasn't it? Aren't we like worse off now? Isn't public education more managed than it's ever been in its history, at least in the United States?
Yes. Future educational historians will see the period we're living through as one of the darkest periods in American educational history. I started getting seriously involved in this, at least around the standards and testing issue in the late 90s. Back then, I thought we'd hit bottom, you know, and then the floor broke through and we found ourselves in a basement that we didn't even know existed, you know, and that was the Many Children Left Behind Act. And then when Obama came in, enormously exacerbated what Bush had started beyond the wildest dreams of the Bush administration and his two secretaries of education and the corporate environment could ever have dreamed of. Clearly there's no argument that now with the Common Core, there's a degree of nationalization, of uniformity from coast to coast and federal control that has never existed before in American history. But it's not just that. And it's important that we not confine our critique to the extent of federal involvement because, I mean, that's what the conservatives hate. You know, they're allergic to anything the federal government does. They want to destroy real learning at the state and district level with their own tests and standards, which from the perspective of a kid or a teacher really isn't much of an improvement. That's why we need a critique that not only goes beyond what percent of the time is spent taking tests, but also goes beyond the question of at what level of government do we have this approach to teaching that's about the transmission of facts and rote rehearsal of skills to prepare kids for tests.
You're so eloquent about these critiques. Is there a limitation to critiques itself? I mean, do we need something else, a vision? And we need the critiques, and your work is fabulous at laying all this out and getting us to really look closely at what's going on and the inhumaneness of it all, the crazy inhumanity of all of this. But there's got to be something else we can do, right? I mean, what is it going to take to get people to sort of start to think, we believe in education, and isn't that something worth believing in? What is it? What do we mean by it?
What do we mean by education? Everyone believes in education.
Right.
You know, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce believes in education strongly. Of course, they mean training future employees to be adequately skilled and show up on time to increase the profits of corporations, but they believe in education. You know, it's like the talk about universal pre-K. Everyone wants high-quality preschool, but what do they mean by high quality? You know, I wrote two books in quick succession, one of which borrowed from the other some years ago. One was called The Case Against Standardized Testing, which laid out what you're calling a critique. But the other one's called The Schools Our Children Deserve,
right,
which attempted to lay out a model of just what it is that the standards and testing movement is undermining. And I always think that's very important to realize. For example, sometimes when I do workshops, I'll start the day by laying out a vision of a remarkable lesson in a classroom where the kids are learning actively and interactively, where they're not just thinking in a sophisticated way, but actually constructing meaning around concepts. Not just memorizing the labels, where it goes on the lesson as long as it needs to, and so on. It's really a rich model where I think anybody watching this classroom would say, wow, that's terrific.
And there's real joy in it.
There's joy in it, that's right. There's excitement on the kids' part. The teacher knows when to shut up as well as when to stick an oar in the water. The point is that almost everybody would watch that classroom and say, that's where I want my kid. And then after we do this and talk about what's remarkable about that classroom, I ask, does Common Core, does the accountability movement, do the standardized tests that our kids take, make it easier or harder for teachers to teach like that? And it's a question that answers itself.
Right.
So instead of just offering a critique, you know, tests measure what matters least, and you can't be as creative or have enough time to play or think or interact under this. Here I want to start by saying this is the kind of learning we want. That's why school reform in its current incarnation is so dangerous, because it makes it harder to teach well.
What you've done there in that lovely example is you've evoked, and so many reforms can be shown to be hollow by revealing that they don't evoke anything worth anything.
So another way of putting this is to say, what's the goal here?
Yeah.
You know, if somebody says a study found that doing X is more effective in classrooms, newspapers, including Education Week, will report that mindlessly. Right. And anyone thoughtful will say, wait, what do you mean by effective?
Mm-hmm.
How are you defining success? And if it turns out that the definition of effectiveness or achievement or success in the study or in some paper that's been released by a think tank is nothing more than higher scores on terrible tests, then you haven't even begun to argue in favor of that proposal, that policy, that practice. What do we mean by effective? And that's the question that's very rarely asked.
Yeah, and to answer it requires some imaginative evoking of an ideal, right?
Yeah, exactly. Otherwise, the question will be answered by default.
Right.
And the default answer of what we're looking for is higher test scores. It worries me so greatly that even many researchers in the academy who understand the practical harms of high-stakes testing then turn around and publish research that uses standardized tests as the dependent variable.
I
don't care if licensure of teachers or smaller classrooms or bilingual or multicultural or cooperative learning or whatever the very independent variable is, I don't care if it raises test scores.
Right.
That's not necessarily good news when you understand just how horrible these are as indicators of learning.
You are listening to Busted Pencils Radio. We're talking to Alfie Cohn, and as you said, we do not care about raising test scores. At what point does teacher education have to stand up and say, this cannot go on? I mean, we're great at talking about Dewey in our classrooms, but I don't think we're that good as teacher educators, or as you say, the academy, even the academy that should be pro-education, which would be defining something at other than standardized test scores. What can we do?
You've got to outfit them with the understanding that in order to do right by kids, they're going to have to be rebels during this dark period. You have to make sure that most of the time in their program of teacher ed, they're experiencing examples of how test scores are not only irrelevant to good teaching, but actively subvert it. So they're going to have to subvert in some way the pressure to raise those tests. In 2015, the students, the young people you're helping to be teachers, have never experienced another reality. For them, this is what it means to go to school, is to have teachers have a curriculum foisted upon them based on standards created by distant authorities, and have to take standardized tests.
Yeah.
They need to know what we've lost by that so they don't experience this as being like the weather. you know, just a fact of life. Yeah. They need to know how to challenge this. And that means lots of experience with the teacher educators modeling, not only teaching about, but modeling in their own classrooms, the kind of teaching that does not use grades, that uses authentic assessments instead of tests, that allows the kids to have, the students to have a lot to say about what they're learning. I mean, there are actually teacher educators out there who create detailed syllabi for their classes before they even meet their students. I mean, what does that say? It says who you are, what you need, what you know. That's irrelevant. This course I created unilaterally, here it comes open wide. And teachers are then going to be tempted to reproduce that same top-down, undemocratic, non-learner-centered approach in their fourth-grade classrooms when they get out there.
The time has come and gone so quickly, Alfie. Thank you for the interview. I want to remind people, though, if you want more of this, please go to alfiecohn.org, because, Alfie, your website is one of the best websites to go and get information for just about any question I want to ask dealing with the things we've talked about today.
Now, thanks.
That is alfiekohn.org. Alfie, thank you so much for your time on Busted Pencils.
Such a privilege to
talk
to you.
Such a privilege. Alfie. Hopefully, definitely, we need to have you back sometime.
All right. I appreciate your interest.
Alfie Cohn really seems to know what he's talking about. Let's see what Matt Damon's mom thinks about that.
Wait, what? You want to know what my mom would say? All right, well, just ask her.
Alfie has a deep understanding of education and education equity and what classrooms should look like and what good education that is really meaningful to learners at every stage looks like. And he also has a very deep understanding of how discipline issues, if you want to call them that for lack of a better word, intersect with curriculum and affect learning. He's a very compassionate person who has a great sense of humor, by the way. You'll have fun with Alfie. He understands how coercion plays out in the education system in its many forms, from timeout to grades to, you know, top-down decision-making. He's very insightful about that, and he even picks up on the subtleties of what teacher coercion can look like in classrooms. And he understands how that affects learning. And that's one of the ways that his deep knowledge and understanding of the education process, I think, is unique to him, because I'm not sure everyone has quite connected the dots as fully as Alfie around those particular issues.
That's the trick there, isn't it? It for me, it's the dots that he connects and then moving that forward.
Yeah.
The extensive amount of research and footnotes in every one of his books or writing this is not just a guy saying something.
No, Alfie is an incredibly smart and informed person. And I used his book Punished by Rewards in one of my classes for several years. And, you know, it's completely fully documented research about really intrinsic and extrinsic rewards and how they affect learning. And the ideas are very profound. I mean, they essentially show you that, yes, you can affect behavior in the short term with your extrinsic approaches, but that to build sort of caring from the inside and responsibility and compassion and love and all of the things we want humans to have, we have to work with them in a way where we're not using power over them, but we're really collaborating. There's a phrase he used when he talked to our students at Lesley in Peaceable Schools: do we want to use power over or doing to? That was what it was. Do we want to use doing to, which is power over, or do we want to really work with or use power with? Is kind of one of his paradigms of, okay, let's figure out how to have relationships that are healthy and constructive in education, where we're not overusing our adult power over learners.
Yeah.
He's also written about that in parenting, in his book on unconditional parenting. That's very good.
Yeah, that's a good book. One of my favorites is The Schools Our Kids Deserve from 1999. Mm. There's a quote in there that I think summarizes. He uses this. He says, it's very simple. Skinner won, Dewey lost.
Yeah. That book is very good. That's right. I mean, that actually, I guess you could say that Skinner. I think that fight's still going on. But
I think the fight's still going on, but that was kind of his thing. If you want to try to remember the context of that being written in 99,
yeah.
Right? At the, you know, is that, yeah, behaviorism, high-stakes standardized testing has won the day. The democratic education for the common good is out of the picture right now.
That is a very good book that I like a lot because he describes classrooms in great detail of that would look like more Dewey type, you know, constructivist education classrooms, and they're very helpful descriptions. But I'm realizing I didn't remember that it was written in 1999, that book. And you know, I went to a meeting with a number of educators, including Alfie, in 2000. It was right before No Child Left Behind got passed, and I remember Alfie sitting on the couch there and telling us, and I heard it for the first time, there's going to be federally mandated standardized tests. And I couldn't believe it. And he was very worried about it. He was the first person to tell me.
This is Matt Damon on Busted Pencils Radio. Please stop bothering me and just ask my mom already.
This week's Activist of the Week has one simple request. Just let me teach. Justin Oakley, welcome to Busted Pencils.
Well, what a great honor, and good to be back, Tim. You've also been on our program.
What made you move into the idea that you should have an education talk show?
Well, minus your show, I'm not aware that there isn't a major media outlet on Earth that's reporting the other side of the coin of what's happening to our education policy in this country. And, you know, we put it out there, started the show. Actually, next month will be 2 years that we've been on the air. And I was lucky out of the gate, had Diane Ravitch come on, did the whole hour. Kind of had the who's who in the education world in Indiana. I've also had the Bats on quite a bit. And we've had Tim Slecker from Busted Pencils on.
Yeah, that guy's horrible.
You know, we have authors from all over the country come join us. We've become kind of like this little landing pad to kind of hear the other side of the story, the truthful side of the story.
In the media, when it comes to talking about what's happening in education, if you just listen to what they quote call mainstream media, you would assume that teachers are failing, schools are failing, and charter schools are the answer to all that is wrong with American education. So Just Let Me Teach Radio is one of those shows that says, hey, wait a minute, there's a different narrative here. In fact, I like the way you say truthfulness. What's your connection to education?
I was a classroom teacher for 10 years. I was also a local president of my local for 10 every year that I taught. So I guess I was crazy out of the gate. I actually ran for state superintendent against the great Tony Bennett here, not the singer, but the superintendent that was an Alec Bott spokesperson that basically came in, went all around the country on Indiana taxpayer dimes and told everybody how terrible education was in Indiana, and kicked teachers' teeth in all around the state, and then couldn't believe he got beat. You know, I'm glad you asked that because I was 35, had never run for political office, and from a very small town in the state of Indiana, and I ran. No one believed it. No one thought you could beat that guy. And a couple weeks before the convention, we picked that seat at the party convention, and the party, for whatever reason, chose Glenda Ritz. I got out, got behind her, and she won. I've kind of went from invincible to invisible on that part of the story, but there's a little secret. There were a couple Davids against the Goliath. There were several Davids, and thousands of teachers got on board in that campaign and got people out to vote.
Justin, it sounds to me like Just Let Me Teach is out there doing the good work of making sure that our public schools and our communities value our public schools. Justin, I want to take the time to say thank you. I appreciate you being on the show. Hey, man, keep busting pencils. Website, Justin?
Yeah, www.indianatalks.com. We're on every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. You just go to tune in, find our Indiana Talks and listen live, or let's find the podcast at our website, or Twitter, @JustLetMe_teach, Facebook, Just Let Me Teach.
Thank you.
Thanks, Tim.
This is Busted Pencils Radio. Fully leaded education talk.
Time now for our weekly tribute to the legendary Howard Zinn with a Busted Pencils moment of Zinn.
Historically, the most terrible things, war, genocide, and slavery, have resulted not from disobedience, but from obedience.
Want more Busted Pencils? Follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Also, log on to BustedPencils.com to keep up with trending news, hear parts of the show, and nominate an Activist of the Week. For Jed Hopkins, I'm Tim Slecker, and thanks for Busting Pencils.